Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 149 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we bar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Mark Hoffmeyer of Movies, Films, and Flicks and the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Listen, anytime I can talk about bridge action scenes, I'm all for it. So this is great. Happy to be back.
I thought you just came here so you could talk about Ernest.
I mean, listen, more people need to talk about those films and the commercials that he was in. You know, Ernest was in the Army. Thank you for assisting me with that. But yeah, I mean, what would you do if Ernest was in this movie? So Saving Private Ryan, all the characters in Ernest P. Worrell. Now, he's pretty much immortal. So how would that change this film if Ernest was in it?
Meaning if he's one of the characters or if he's all the characters?
Ernest P. Worrell is just someone in the platoon that goes with them.
In place of someone else?
No, or in addition? He's just there too.
So again, he's going to be one of the guys who's going to survive.
Yeah, so he survives.
Are you asking, is he going to be able to change the way that this the events happen? Is that the question here?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, if he's immortal, he knows he's immortal, he's going to be running up to the tank, and he's going to be, you know, shooting everyone on the tank, and then he's going to be running, to the area where the Panzer Shrek is, and he's going to shoot them, and he's going to shoot Steamboat Willie, he's going to kill the guy who kills Mellish before he kills Mellish. I mean, like, if you're talking about an inhuman, a superhuman, Ernest. So go on. There's no question of what he could do.
He'll send an army of parachuting turtles to attack the Germans. Like in Ernest Goes to Camp. You know what happened to him? That troll cursed his family, so magic got placed on his family. So that's why he's able to survive electrocutions, and the prophecy to keep him alive from Trantor the Troll made his family imbued with magic. And explains everything in the franchise. Thoughts?
And that's an interesting way to put it. I'm not as versed in Ernest as you are. So, you know, I generally don't give much thought to Ernest in my daily life. Sorry to disappoint you there, Mark.
It's a shame. Well, we can change that. We can change that today.
I know that you're definitely going to try. That's the way it looks, or that's the way it sounds. All right, so minute 149 begins with Reitman continuing to shout and ends with Miller and Ryan preparing to repel the attack. Yesterday, we had all these guys just running towards the Alamo. Going, Alamo, Alamo, let's get out of here, Alamo. You know, running away from the tank that in your opinion is like a dinosaur. You know, it's a T-Rex.
It's a metal monster.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, they're just all trying to get out of here, and then we get a shot of the German commander, you know, on the tank, motioning for people to go in a particular direction. And I love at around 5 seconds, you see the tank in the background and you see a bunch of the U.S. soldiers in the foreground running, you know, trying to keep their heads down. One guy has got his hand on his helmet, you know, so his helmet doesn't fall off as he's running, stuff like that. And you see the German soldiers then sprinting from behind to try and catch them also. It's just a great shot. It's very succinct as to what's going on here with the whole thing. Now, this is a cat and mouse game that keeps changing sides as to who is the cat and who's the mouse.
Absolutely. And you know what else is smart about this action scene? Where they went to the Tom Cruise school of explaining what happens and then showing you what happens. Like every Mission Impossible movie or Top Gun, it's like, we're going to do this. This is the mission. And then they go on the mission. So you know when they're doing the mission, what the mission is, and where they have to go. So in this one, the geography is so easy to follow because they talk about the sticky grenades. They talk about where the ammo is. You get these people ammo, and then we'll all fall back to the Alamo. So it's such an easy action scene to follow. And so when you're watching this, you're not worried too much about the geography of it all. You're just in the moment because you know they're going to the Alamo, and they say it a bunch of times as well. Correct. But it's very smart filmmaking because, hey, here's the plan. We're going to try to draw them in. We'll create a bottleneck. We'll probably get flanked. They're coming on this side, which they showed before. You know, now we're running back to the Alamo because that's our last ditch, and then here's the bridge. We're going to blow it. Like, it's such an easy thing to follow, and I love that about it. And you're right. Like, they set the trap, and then they immediately got outnumbered, and now it's a cat and mouse. Like, they are very much being hunted. And you see the red shirts, because we talked about Star Trek, getting wiped out as they run along this. Like, it's very – there's only a few of them left right now, and odds aren't looking great. And also, I love how the rocket launchers look like spitballs on those Tiger tanks.
That's right. That's very true. Again, I've been keeping track of how many Allied troops have died in the battle so far. So up until now, we have 14 that we've seen die on screen.
How many aided on the tank? Until this minute,
the tank was like 5 or 6.
Man, they got shredded.
Yes.
So just in that moment, they lost more than half. Like on the tank, the sticky grenades.
Yeah. Again, I include here, both Parker and Jackson and Mellish in this tally also.
Got it. Oh yeah, Mellish.
You see that they're all trying to make it away towards the towards the safety, and they run through like a fence that has an opening with barbed wire on it and stuff like that, and then one of the guys gets shot and falls down. So we can add one to the tally. So now we're up to 15 of the number of Allied soldiers who, because that's one of the things. We never know how many men are there to defend Rommel.
Yeah, that's a good point. They never say we have this many dudes.
That's right. We know that there are 6 that have joined them, and that's it. And of those 6, 2 of them have already died. So of these 14, of these 15 that we now have, so 13 of them are men from Ryan's unit, I guess you could say. Well, again, it's a patchwork unit. Remember, Mendelssohn Michelson, again, there's a discrepancy as to what his name is, because in the movie they call him Mendelssohn, but in the credits he's called Michelson. And so, Ryan Hurst, for anyone who's paying attention. And so he said that, an officer came and took a whole bunch of guys to go defend Rommel. So these are not guys that Ryan has been with for a very long time. He's been with them a day or two.
I mean, they're pretty well. They're blowing up tanks and fields. They're looking pretty strong.
Yeah. It could have been that some of them were together before. It's not that they're all complete strangers to one another.
Can we talk about something that we haven't covered yet? The cinematography here. And I love how there's a lot of beautiful wide shots, but I think they were able to shoot it so closely by all the close-ups in this. Like Kaminsky, just by keeping that steady cam, there's so many close-up shots where you don't have to show the entirety of the background. And I love how they do that. And I also like how they take time. There's that scene where they go inside the airplane to talk. That cuts down on the amount of extras. I like how they have that fight scene in the room that cuts down on the extras. I like during this scene how close they get. I think you can move a lot faster because you don't have to worry about 80 extras. You don't have to worry about all that. So I think, you've already talked about this and how you talk about warfare and, warfare methods. I think this is a pretty great way on how to shoot warfare, where you keep it close and dirty, but then you also have the occasional wide shots of them walking through the gorgeous French countryside. You have the overhead shot of Omaha Beach to establish what they have to go against. But I love in the scene how close they keep it. And it's such a smart filmmaking technique.
Right. And it's I love the way that it's also saturated.
Yeah.
The saturation makes it feel gritty and used. This isn't something that's fresh and new.
And then they shot in Ireland, right?
Yeah. They shot most of this in Ireland. Yeah.
You're going to have to de-green that. to begin with, that's a lush country. So, I think even that idea was smart. They didn't just go.
There's no grass in Rommel.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, I just the way they desaturated the bleach bypass, the way they ran that through, It's just such a smart way to shoot this scene. And I love how close they keep it. So I dig that. I just wanted to get that out there before I got my episodes done.
Yeah, no, it's for sure. It's amazing the way they do that. And it keeps it so, it keeps us so focused by the way that
they do. Very focused. I love this movie.
So then Miller goes to a post that they had there and picks up a bazooka and gets ready to shoot the bazooka at the tank. And then Mike comes over to him and screams at him and goes, "We'll take it. You fall back." Now, I don't know, first of all, why he says, "We'll take it." Who's we?
Well, he has that guy running with him.
Well, no, we know that Ryben's next to him. But again, he says we. Who, Upham? You know, he's got – he brought Upham with him. Yeah, Upham's going to help me. He's going to feed in the rockets to the bazooka.
He's not even kidding. Yeah.
Right. Now, obviously, Miller has no idea at this point that that Mike's been injured. You know, because he's not acting as if he's injured.
Yeah, that's true. He wouldn't tell you to begin with.
That's right. And then he looks at Mike and goes, "You'll be right behind us." And he goes, soon as we're in business.
I mean, what does that rocket blast do to that Tiger tank? Like, that's not, I mean, you have to do that, but I don't know. I know nothing about combat.
Well, again, it's the idea of, at this point, then Mike takes up a position and gets ready to shoot the bazooka at the tank, and he shoots it and basically scratches the turret, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's more or less, you know, it seems as if it's more as he's trying to draw its attention.
Oh. You know,
that's more or less what he's doing here. Yeah, you know, he's like, "All right, you know, turn that turret towards me."
Yeah, don't blow up, you know, anything before we can blow up the bridge, I guess. That makes sense.
And we still see the guy who was shot earlier still writhing on the ground.
Yeah, he's just laying there, and they just run past him.
That's right. And then Mike turns to Ryben and goes, "Displace, Ryben." And then he gets up and he starts running to a different position. You know, he gets behind another bag of sandbags, another block of sandbags, and gets into position. And then the shot changes and we're back to Upham, who somehow is now in a ditch. You know, he's somehow got himself into a ditch.
Mike just got rid of him.
That's right. And he's crawling up. And what's really interesting is beforehand, he had two reams of bullets on him, and now he only has one. So I don't know where that other one went.
Gone with the wind.
Apparently. And then he's trying to crawl out of this ditch, and then he hears a whole bunch of German soldiers run by and decides to just ignore them.
And, you know, hide, and they do the same.
Hide even more. And they just pass by him. They're like, "Oh, we heard from Fritz that Upham's not going to shoot us, so we'll just we'll just let him be."
You know, I guess when you have other things to worry about, you just compartmentalize. Just, what do I need to worry about the most? This little fellow writhing on the ground, or these soldiers shooting at me with rocket launchers? So you just, I'm going to tackle this first, and we'll come back to this guy later.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the way it looks. You know, and he's just making himself a smaller and smaller target each time. And we just see more and more of these German soldiers just running by. You know, and nobody is paying attention to the ditch. You really would think that they would. Here they are in a situation where you got to be concerned about what's going to come at you from every direction. But nobody's looking in this ditch. I mean, again, Upham is not a threat. We know that. But still.
But you don't know that, right? So you're probably...
That's right.
Hmm. That's another plot hole in a hole. I mean, how much would it have taken for someone just to pot shot him real quick? That
it would take no time whatsoever.
Exactly. But I mean, then he wouldn't live at the end.
But we need him. We need him to kill Steamboat Willie.
Yep. Steamboat.
Yeah.
Do you think Steamboat would have killed him?
No.
No?
I don't think so. No. Because Steamboat Willie saw him as a friend.
Okay.
Because Steamboat Willie saw him as, you know, the his advocate. So he wouldn't think for a second to kill him unless, you know, he saw that, that Upham was, I mean, again, we'll see this in, a, in we'll see this, I think, next week, that Steamboat Willie doesn't even believe that Upham's going to shoot him when he points the gun at him.
Yeah, you're right.
So
if he acted afraid, do you think Upham would have? Oh, we'll talk about it later. We don't need to talk about that now. But
he doesn't see Upham as a threat. So why would he act afraid?
Good point.
You know, that's the issue here. Right. And so Upham just, you know, tries to camouflage himself as much as possible. And what's really funny is you see that he closes his eyes tightly, which means that, you know, the whole idea is if you close your eyes, then it'll go away.
I guess you just don't see the bullet hitting you, so that's good.
That's true also. but you know, you don't want to rely on your on your auditory senses in this type of situation. Because
he has no idea what he's doing.
Nope, none whatsoever. Absolutely no clue. And then the shot changes and we see Miller and Ryan running across the bridge as they're dodging all the little bullets that are coming across their way. And then they run behind another position that they've set up with a whole bunch of sandbags. And you know, they realize that they've reached a place where they can actually resupply, you know, at this point. And as they're getting ready to fill up their bags or do whatever they need to do, the minute ends. So we're gonna have to wait until tomorrow to see what they actually do in that position.
I'm nervous. This is nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's understandable that you wouldn't know what they're gonna do here. All right, so Mark, you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I mean, there's really no themes to tackle other than hiding in holes and running. So it's not, there's not much you can riff on. So yeah, I think I'm good. I think I'm good here.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So every Thursday I have a segment, which is a game, and it's called Say What Thursday. Say what? Say what? Say again. What? Say what again? I
say what?
I say what? Dare you. Okay. So the idea behind this game is that this movie is filled with so many, recognizable actors, from past and future. And so it's a very simple game. I'm going to give you a movie quote and you're going to have to tell me who the actor is and what movie it is. I'm going to give you the movie quote and the year. Okay. Now, because there are so many people in this movie, I'm going to narrow it down just to three. Okay. So you have three choices. It could either be something that Tom Hanks says, Vin Diesel, or Giovanni Ribisi.
Okay.
Okay. Those are your three choices. Again, it's possible I won't use all three of them. You know, there's no guarantee that you're going to have one from each.
Okay.
All right. So we will start with the first one. It is a movie from 2000. And the quote is, "I promise we'll swing for the fences on the next one. Let me put my secretary on and she'll take down your info. Do you want that confirmation sent to your office or to your mansion? It's a pleasure doing business."
Boiler Room, Vin Diesel.
Excellent. That's great.
Nicely done. or Ribisi, actually.
No, that's Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. But they're both in it. Sorry.
They're both in it. Yes, they are. Yeah, that is a Vin Diesel quote. Yeah, no, the quote is actor specific.
Okay. Got it.
All right. The next one is from 2009. Look. You're supposed to be winning the hearts and minds of the natives. Isn't that the whole point of your little puppet show? If you Avatar. Walk like them, you talk like them, they'll trust you. We build them a school, teach them English. But after how many years? The relations with the indigenous are only getting worse. And you are correct. It is Avatar. Ribisi. Who is the actor? Ribisi. Excellent. Okay, here's another one from 2000. What do you mean you're going to pass? Allen, the only people making money passing are NFL quarterbacks, and I don't see a number on your back.
One more time.
What do you mean you're going to pass, Allen? The only people making more money passing are NFL quarterbacks, and I don't see a number on your back. From 2000.
I don't know. I don't know that one.
Oh, I know that you do know it. So I'm going to do it again. A movie from 2000, okay? What do you mean you're going to pass, Allen? The only people making money passing are NFL quarterbacks, and I don't see a number on your back.
What do you mean you're going to pass, Allen?
The problem is if I give you any lifelines here, you're going to get it right away. I mean, again, I want you to get it, but...
Is it Boiler Room again by Rabisi?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay, good. I was like, can I use the same movie again? Okay.
Yes, I can. All right. I was gonna give you two. I might have two more Boiler movie quotes.
Okay, good. Okay, cool.
All right. The next one is from 2013. We can't make the picture without the color red. The film is set in London, for Pete's sake.
We can't make the picture without the color red. The film is set in London.
2013.
We can't make the film without the color red. Making the film in London. Is it like Saving Mr. Banks with Tom Hanks?
Yes, it is.
Whoa.
Mark, you're doing excellent.
I've never even seen that movie.
And there you go. You still got the quote without having seen it. Okay, and the final one for you from 2004. The design is perfect. The only flaw is that we have to rely on you to fly it.
The design is perfect. The only flaw is that we have to rely on you
to fly it.
Could you do it one more time?
From 2004, the design is perfect. The only flaw is that we have to rely on you to fly it.
The design is perfect. The only flaw is that we have to rely on you. And this is what year again?
2004. It could be Tom Hanks. It could be Vin Diesel. Or it could be Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, is it Flight of the Phoenix with Ribisi?
Perfect. Wow. Mark, 5 for 5. Mm-hmm. I'm very impressed.
I haven't seen that movie in 21 years.
And you still got the quote?
Jeez Louise. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what I hold up here, movie Rob, but that was good.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. So, Mark, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, Movies, Films, and Flicks, the podcast, moviesfilmsandflicks.com, or Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Mark, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to see what Miller and Ryan are up to?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Excellent. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earnest. P. World.